President and CEO of the Native American Community Clinic, NAC, here in Minneapolis. He's a 2024 Bush Fellow and enrolled member of Oneida Nation. He is a prominent leader in the Indigenous healthcare and especially in culturally integrated care, harm reduction, and addressing historical trauma. Dr. Stately, thank you so much for coming on today. Really, really appreciate you. Welcome, as always, to Native Roots Radio.
Oh, Bushu, Robert. Thank you. That was a very kind introduction. Thank you.
Yeah, you know, I you're on AI. I just typed your name in, and it has a little picture of you too, smiling with your purple shirt too. It's pretty funny. If you've seen it, but I had to laugh. That's Dr. Stately. Whoever picked that picture out.
That's funny. Yeah, I don't. I don't typically do Google myself or anything like that. So it's kind of funny. My son once told me not too long ago. He goes, "Oh, he was in school." He's like, "I Googled you." He goes, "God, Dad, you've done a lot of stuff."
Yeah.
I said, yeah. Can't still respect the command from you.
Yeah. Well, you know, yeah. And we're lucky here. Your son is right. We're lucky to have you on here and just have a conversation about what's going on, what's going on with the clinic. I'd like to, if you don't mind, just to get an update of what's happening with the clinic, because every time I go on Franklin Avenue, which is pretty often, there seems to be more movement on the clinic. It almost seems like it's done, but I'm sure there's tons more to do.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we still have a good 6 months, 7 months before we open. So it's March 6th. We're going to probably open. Is it the 6th? No, it's the 9th. Okay. Your thing on the bottom of your thing is the wrong date, by the way. So it's March 8th.
Oh, thank you.
March 9th.
Thank you very much.
What's that thing called? It's a ticker. A ticker?
Yeah,
a
ticker. It is a ticker.
Ticker tape.
And I thought I did such a good job today.
Well, you know, you're getting old. You can't remember everything. I was going to say, so in about April, May, June, July, August. So I think probably 7 months. 7 months we will be completed with the construction inside and exit. Right now, when you go and see the building, you drive by, you can see it. The crane is down, so the entire structure is up and completed, right? The structure from the corn shell, as they like to call it. So the building itself is there, all six stories, which is really nice, and all the windows are in, you know. And I'm kind of anxious to say this, none of the windows have been broken yet, you know. It's like nope. No one in the community has thought to take a rock or anything like that. So please don't, if you're listening to this. But you know, all the windows are in, the paneling is all starting to go on, and we're building out the inside of the housing program project, and also the all of the things that are going in the clinic, the two floors of the clinic. So actually the housing, most of the housing was completed, at least the framing, you know, and the of the whole entire thing was done about a month ago. So recently, I think I told you this, we went we took a tour, a guided tour with some of the people who supported the housing and the clinic project, Minnesota Commissioner of the Minnesota Housing Division. And then the LG was there and a couple of other people, you know, the people who invested in it. We took them on a hard hat tour. Went up to the fourth floor, and almost all the units are already, the only thing that's missing is the kitchen cabinetry and a few other things. And, you know, they could see all the basic outlines of the apartments, which is really cool. I do have to tell you that, the units on the top third, the third and the fourth floor of the housing project, so it would be floors 5 and 6, would be have very nice views of downtown Minneapolis. You can see like the downtown skyscrapers, and you can see, you know, that behemoth of a arena down the road a bit.
Yeah. The bird killer stadium.
The bird killer stadium. Yeah. You know, the people that live in those units, and you know, the other views are beautiful as well. You get like a nice western view of the sunsets and such. But I think the thing that I was just really overwhelmed by that whole tour with the mall was just like, one, it was a real pinch me moment. Like, okay, this is actually really happening. It's not just a pipe dream anymore. It's not something I just imagined at some point in time. It's actually happening. And, you know, just walking through it, I was like, God, the people here that come here and will live in this place and this space will really have a beautiful, beautiful place to live. Right. It's just,
yeah.
And we deserve this. Our community deserves this. Right. And so I'm just really, I don't know, I'm overwhelmed every time I have that experience. And deeply grateful and honored to just be one of the individuals that got to lead this project, you know, and be part of it. You know, it's just it's a really once in a lifetime kind of a thing, I think. So
now it's six floors, and the top four floors are
affordable housing, affordable and supportive housing. NAC will have about, I think, somewhere between 11 and 20 units that will sort of like be responsible for managing. Section 811 housing that the city kind of gave us governance over. So we'll make the decisions as on who lives there. The rest of it is deeply affordable. Everything from 60% AMI to 30% AMI. We're starting to have some conversations now with our partners in the community about like, and in state and local government around, you know, how we create a indigenous a model of housing and supportive and housing that will be well positioned to support the people in our community that need this housing. Many of our unsheltered people right now that don't have a place to live, and we have a high priority, especially in those supportive housing units. People would meet the criteria for Section 811. And then I think the more importantly, you know, we're working with our housing partner, Wellington Management, who is going to own and operate the housing above the clinic. We have a great partnership. We're going to work with them and work with our Simpson Housing, who's going to help us with our supportive housing process. We're kind of developing a model of housing that really responds to the needs of the community and supports them so they can stay housed and get the things that they need in their lives. So,
well, I'd like to talk a little bit more about the clinic when we get back. We are here with Dr. Stately, the president and CEO of Native American Community Clinic here in Minneapolis in the Twin Cities, and just some exciting news. And we'll be right back after this short break. Please stay with us. Ho-wa.
Who teach us of our creation and our past, so we may preserve Mother Earth for ancestors yet to come. We are the land.
This is dedicated to our relatives before us, thousands of years ago, and to the 150 million who were exterminated across the Western Hemisphere in the first 400 years' time, starting in 1492.
To those who have kept their homelands and to the nations extinct due to mass slaughter, slavery, deportation, and disease unknown to them, and to the ones who are subjected to the same treatment today, to the ones who survived the relocations and the ones who died along the way, to those who carried on traditions and lived strong among their people, to those who left their communities by force or by choice and for generations no longer know who they are.
to those who search and never find, to those that turn away the so-called non-accepted, to those that bring us together, and to those living outside keeping touch, the voice for many.
To those that make it back to live and fight the struggles of their people, to those that give up and those who do not care, to those who abuse themselves and others, and those who revive again, to those who are physically, mentally, or spiritually incapable by accident or by birth, to those who seek strength in our spirituality and ways of life, and those who exploit it, even our own. To those who fall for the lies and join the dividing lines that keep us fighting amongst each other.
To the outsiders who step in, good or bad, and those of us who don't know better. To the leaders and prisoners of war, politics, crime, race, and religion, innocent or guilty.
To the young, the old, the living, and the dead. To our brothers and sisters and all living things across Mother Earth, and her beauty we've destroyed. And denied the honor that the Creator...
Welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents. I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot. Hey, welcome back, everyone. Here we are with Dr. Stately, PhD, LP, is the president and CEO of Native American Community Clinic here in Minneapolis. And geez, you know, Dr. Stately, one of the things I'd like to ask you, and what I feel like is kind of interesting, and I kind of probably already know the answer to this, is how many people have reached out to you, different communities and Native communities, on how you were able to secure this amount of money and do this for our community? I mean, this has got to be something that hasn't done around the country by BIPOC or Natives.
I've had a good handful of people reach out and ask me, you know, how we were able to accomplish what we did. And I also have had, like, you know, just like whenever I give a talk or something, people are always like, oh, I want to introduce you to somebody and maybe you can. And I tell people, like, you know, the the process by which we took to get to where we're at was a long one. You know, we've been on this path now for a good 6 years, right? So in 2020, March of 2020 is when we went to the state legislature to ask for money to purchase the building and the land that we were already in, the building we're already in. So it's been like since that point in time, I mean, it's been 6 years to get to where we're at. So it's going to be a good like 6.5, almost 7 years from the imagining it to actually, you know, so it's not an easy process and it's not a short process. It's a long process of like getting partners. What I would say is, like, it seems impossible to do unless you have strong partnerships and relationships with people across a sector of things, right? Mm-hmm. A sector of different businesses and entities. So, you know, I think the hardest part or the biggest part is like just taking the time to build that.
It's amazing because I'm all about manifesting, and I feel like, you know, 2020, that's just was like towards the end of COVID, and that's amazing that you started then. But you and your group that worked on this must have been really manifesting this, because this is unbelievable. I mean, I can't really minimize, you know, I can't say enough about what's happening and how this is really going to affect our community even more than the clinic is now. This is just a gold standard. It's just a beautiful building right now.
Oh, well, thank you. I appreciate those kind words and comments. And when I look back, you know, we're in the process right now of putting together this. So myself, Sarah Anderson, who I know you know, our development director, and another person and I were, so Greg Harrison, who is our vice president of clinic administration. He was our operations officer for the last 10 years. We were getting together and talking about a slide deck we're putting together to kind of use, you know, for the next year or so while we sort of take our next, you know, vision for the entire clinic to to our partners and talk a little bit more about like how they can invest in helping us to get to where we want with this project. And one of the things that we decided to do, or we were told by the people that are working with us, we're working with this group that's helping us to build our development strategy. They're like, you know, on the first, you know, show what you've accomplished over the last several years of this project. You know, give us a timeline of like what, you know, give us the NAC lifeline, the timeline. And so we sat down to do that. And, you know, when I look back on the 10 years I've been here since the beginning of time, my tenure there, I realized that, you know, so much of what we've been able to accomplish was just, you know, me asking a question like what, asking the questions like what if we did this or what if we did that, or, you know, and you know, I think the other thing that I wanted to say is like, you know, I get a lot of accolades, I think, from people and recognition for being, you know, this amazing leader, and that certainly is humbling and, you know, to me. But I also think like, you know, my biggest learning curve over the life of my career has been to get to this place where I can be the kind of leader that I am, which is recognizing that like I don't need to know everything. I don't, you know, and I think that there's a lot of people. We have somebody in an executive office now who thinks that way. you know, where, you know, my job as an executive leader and our leader of this sort of like caliber is to recognize that everybody has some talents and everybody has some wisdom and some really amazing things to bring to the table, and just putting together the you know, the menu of those individuals into something that can make a really beautiful, you know, display or a buffet is like the majority of my work. It's not, you know, I don't, and a lot of times my job is to ask the question like, well, what if we did this? And then if we, and then the next question is like, how would we get there? Mm. Right. And so letting you just let the people that work with you, if you have strong talent and you've nurtured them and you've helped to build them, they'll step in and they'll like be like, well, I think the path is this way. Right. And then, you know, you do the next best thing, which is you give them the resources to do the thing and get the hell out of their way and you let them do their work. Right. And then something really amazing comes out of that. And I was really blessed in this process. I was so blessed in this process. NAC was really blessed in this process. We assembled an amazing team who helped us to, I mean, I never built a building before. I never raised that kind of money before, never in my life. But we made it happen because we believed. Number two, there was no other alternative. We never thought like this is not going to happen. We never thought like this is not something that we can say no to. Once we started, once we put our first foot on the path, we were determined. And so that was a big part of it, having people, you know, aligned and, you know, working together collectively on the project was a really big deal. I have some of the most amazing people on this project.
You know, it's really fun, and I do this once in a while with my life, and especially, you know, being in recovery, we're really mm-hmm. taught about reflecting, connecting the dots backwards in how many people have helped me get to where I'm at, whether it's spiritual, financial, or all the above. And I have a lot of people to thank, and I imagine you do too.
Oh yeah, God, immeasurable, you know, just innumerable. I can't even count them all. I mean, a big part of, I think, the foundation of who I am really came from, like, you know, I was born and raised in South Minneapolis. My growing up years, my formative years, I was deeply embedded in, like, you know, the civil rights movement, the American Indian movement, all the things that were happening on Franklin Avenue. My mother was deeply involved in those things. My mother was a community activist. You know, these are the things that sort of like, you know, forged who I am, right? They've laid the foundation of who I was. I was a mess when I was in high school. I mean, I was a mess when I was you know, a young person trying to figure out what I was doing in my life. But when I got clean and sober at 23 and, you know, went back to school to finish my degree and start graduate school, and when I was 28, you know, that trajectory from the time I stopped, I got clean and sober and I asked for help, and to this day has been a consistent experience of me saying, I don't know how I'm going to do this. I don't know how I'll start. And then setting down some prayers and just asking for help and for, you know, for Creator to cut my path and help me, you know. And when I step into anything I do and I ask and I start from that place, I think there's some act of providence that happens where, you know, my ancestors and the Creator and all of the collective, you know, prayers that sacrifices our people have made since the beginning of time kind of, you know, get activated, and it just kind of becomes, I'm not saying that it was easy, but it certainly made it easier, right?
And it's amazing that we've had all these people help us, but also now we're at a point in our life where, you know, with your sons, with my grandchildren, with people that we know in the community, people that work for you, that we can help without, I guess, easy for me to say this, without any strings attached, and because of what's been given to us over the years.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think like my, you know, I as the leader of NAC, and I think we kind of have this sort of embedded into our value system and the way we operate. We really do try to sort of also give people opportunity. We try really hard to sort of create opportunities for young people to step into the space and learn things, and we support them on their development process and those things. It is a real clear personal passion of mine, but also a commitment of mine to pay this forward, right? I have a responsibility. Like I say this sometimes, like the chair I sit isn't the chair that I earned. Somebody else cut my path and helped me to get here. So I have a responsibility to do the same thing. I have the responsibility to share that.
I'm loving this conversation today, Dr. Stately. I really appreciate you. We're going to continue having this conversation after a quick short break. This is Native Roots Radio, and we are with our friend, Dr. Stately. We'll be right back after the short break. Please stay with us. Ho-wa.
Support for KFAI comes from First Avenue, presenting Cass McCombs at the Turf Club, Monday, March 30th. Singer-songwriter Cass McCombs is touring with his latest album, Interior Live Oak, a rock and soul release of dreamscape music anchored by metaphor-laced lyrics. From cryptic imagery to confessional heartbreak, Cass McCombs has the ability to be intimate and mysterious at the same time. Opening the show is Chris Cohen. More information about Cass McCombs at the Turf Club is available at first-avenue.com.
Listening to Native Roots Radio. I'm Bobby Wilson. Wee-cha.
Welcome to Native Roots Radio presents I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Wakanja Hade. Hey, welcome back, everyone. This is Native Roots Radio, and we are with our friend, Dr. Stately, CEO and president of Native American Community Clinic here in Minneapolis, Twin Cities. Let's talk a little bit about the services that you guys have, because it's so wide, and, you know, I've been your friend for a while here, and I'm still learning on what you guys are doing there and some of the outside things that, you know, like healing for men and you know, things like that that you're doing. But the clinic's a basic clinic. Can you tell us about the services that the clinic provides?
Sure. So what I would say is our core clinical operations consists of, what you would find in just about any community health center or federally qualified healthcare center. You have primary care services, medical services, preventative care, we treat people with chronic disease, diabetes, high blood pressure, cardiovascular disease, those kinds of things. We have a big spectrum there. We have a robust behavioral health program, mental health services, outpatient mental health program, provides your typical traditional Western model of therapies, but also have some integrated models in that. That include things like brain spotting, Reiki, and some other things that are integrated into that. Then we have our dental program. So you can come to NAC and get, preventative dental care and restorative dental care pretty much year one through, your lifespan. Our dental operation is probably one of our busiest and sometimes our most longest wait list for services, because not a lot of people that provide dental services to people who are uninsured or underinsured are on Medicaid, and that's what we do. And then we have substance abuse treatment programs. We have an intensive outpatient treatment program that we operate with a tribal partner at the Minobizidwin Clinic down the street at Red Lakes Building. We also have a MAT clinic for people who are recovering from opiate use disorder, and they can come to our clinic and get a Suboxone or other medicines that will help them sort of deal with their heroin addiction, and we treat other substance use as well. Within that model, that specific MAT model, we also have we're working with the city of Minneapolis on a pilot project called the Brixadi Project that delivers long-acting up to 1 month of Suboxone with a shot, which is helpful for people who are living unhoused and living in shelter systems. Can't manage their medication very well. Their lives are fairly chaotic or upended, or they just have so many things that they have to manage, right? So that program has been really helpful. We're seeing some really great results as a part of that pilot. And then 2018, we built out our traditional healing program. We started that program back in 2018, actually March of 2018, so almost exactly 8 years ago. And that program and that department has grown substantially. It started out as a program and now it's its own department and division. We have enough resources in that area. We have a director of traditional healing. Her name is Ashley Jolin. And under traditional healing, we are working to integrate those traditional healing practices across all of our clinic service models in our service centers, including medical and dental eventually. Right now we have a footprint in behavioral health. Traditional healing, we also provide substantive sort of resources to the community at large. We do workshops on regalia making, moccasin making, drum making, all these things to the community to give them access and resources to practice singing, dancing, other cultural things, go to ceremony, all these things. And we also, in partnership with other community partners like Red Lake Nation, MIWRC, and a few other folks, we provide two ceremonies a month to the community that anybody can come to. You don't have to be a NAC patient to come. It's open to anybody, any one of our relatives living in the community. And that's a cedar ceremony that's always this first Thursday of the month, and then the full moon ceremony that kind of happens wherever the full moon lands.
Cool. Wow. That's unbelievable. Hey, I have a question too. Where's the front door of the new clinic? Because I guessed wrong. I guess that when we were eating at Maria's, I thought that that was going to be the front, but that's not the front. That's a total different kind of place to meet room.
Oh, you're looking at the front of, you're looking at the building on the western side, which we are calling the front, actually. But that big thing that's in the front is actually our community room. So we have a community room where we will do a lot of our traditional healing workshops and stuff. Right now, a lot of the things that we do are so big that we don't have enough space in our little tiny clinic. We have to do those things at the Indian Center, MIWC, Little Earth, those kinds of things. And I'm sure that some of the things we do, we will continue to do in other spaces, likely, just because it's always good to have a footprint in the community, right? But we're excited to bring some of those things back into our own space when we open the new building. And then the technical, there'll be two entrances. There'll be a north entrance and a south entrance. The south entrance will be on the side of the building that is closest to 21st Street. So the building we're in now, the old Dollar Tree and, development building, that's going to get knocked down after we finish the clinic and the housing project, and that'll be made into our new parking lot. So the primary entrance and the primary place where people will park and enter the building is going to be on the southern entrance.
Oh, okay.
There's also an entrance on the north side that you can come into if you happen to take the bus and you get dropped off on Franklin Avenue or something. So two entrances to the clinic.
So that's very cool. That's
two entrances and two exits.
And just there is a Robert Pilot parking spot in the new lot once you tear down the strip mall there.
There will be for a very sizable investment in the operation, yes. Between the hours of like noon and 1 o'clock on, Friday or something. I don't know.
Yeah. The clinic, how long has the clinic been around? Because what you're doing right now in that small area before you move into this nice new building is just amazing. How long has the clinic been around?
We opened our doors in 2003. So we've been around for 23 years. We just celebrated our 23rd birthday on February 15th. And then I think some people probably know this history, but NAC really did get its start in 2001 rather, when five people left the Indian Health Board. There was, I wasn't living in Minneapolis at the time, but there was some challenges in the community and across the community. But one of the things I like to say about NAC is that NAC was started out of community activism, right? So some people left Indian Health Board. They were having some contention with the existing leadership at that time, their board of directors and other leadership. And they left the organization because they just couldn't resolve some of their differences and conflicts. And when they left, people in the community sort of like were like, wait, hold up. I've had this lifelong relationship with you. I remember Dr. Carol Crush, she was on the board of directors when I started. She used to be one of the providers at Indian Health Board, and she was a provider at NAC when NAC started. She was one of the founding members of NAC. She said to me, people told her, like, you can't leave our community. Like, you gave birth to my children. You gave birth to my grandchildren. They were really clear about the importance of the people that they had these relationships with, So I talk a lot about how NAC has kind of really focused our relationship in healthcare around, really reclaiming healthcare, not what we typically have in health systems, which is sick care, and focusing the transformation of healthcare into a relational model where, the first year I was at NAC, I asked my leadership staff, I said, what do you think would happen to our model of care? How would it change if we started thinking of the people who walk through the front door and come to us for help? We started calling, referring to them as relatives, which is what they are, instead of patients. Mm-hmm. How do you think the way we show up would change? And I think that was a really foundational, pivotal moment in time when I asked that question, because it's always been based in a relationship, It was born out of activism and people demanding that they stay and saying, you're too important to us. You know, you've been with us from the beginning, with my family's from the beginning. I want you here, right? And so, you know, they actually got their 501c3 status in 2001, and then they opened their doors in 2003. And then in 2005, I believe, 2 years later, we got 501, and we got federally qualified healthcare center status, which was the big commitment from HRSA.
That's amazing. I appreciate this because some of the stuff I don't know, and we always have new listeners to the history of Native American Community Clinic. That's amazing, and what a legacy that you are part of. And geez, I just really appreciate you coming on and talking about these things. And you know, rumor has it you may be having a show come up here too. That could be very cool right after Native Roots Radio. So more to come and more to talk about there. And you definitely have so much to give to the community and so much information. I just want to say a big thank you, a big peeny geegee. Thank you so much, Dr. Stately, for being on today.
Well, thank you. I appreciate the partnership, and I also appreciate the honor, the privilege to be here. It's always fun to spend time with you and your listeners. So.
Yeah. And you too. Yeah, you are such a big part of the show, and I just want to say a big peeny geegee thanks. Thank you again. Right on. Hey, up next, Wendy with our Sacred Animal Update. We'll be right back after this short break.
Stay with us.
Oh.
It's Dr. Evan Adams, and you're listening to Native Roots Radio. Hey, Victor, you better be listening.
In this portion of the show, we'd like to bring awareness to our wolf and bear populations throughout Turtle Island. Say no to the hunts.
Oh! Oh.
Hey, we are so excited to have our friend, actor, musician, and frontman of the Gary Farmer and the Troublemakers. Gary Farmer is here to talk about, we got an upcoming Ancestral Fire concert here in the Minnesota tour. Gary, thank you so much for coming on. I know you're so busy up there, up north, pleasing your fans. Thank you so much, and thanks for being on Native Roots Radio.
No, it's a pleasure, Robert. Good to see you again.
Hey, our friend Arvina Martin, our political consultant, is on here too with us, and we've been just talking politics, so it's probably a good time right now to talk about the show at the Ice House and what you have upcoming. And also, there's something really important too, a call to action about, we just listened into your song in the first segment, and talk about voting for your song and the Indigenous Network thing. If we can talk about those couple things, that would be great.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, I don't know if you know, Robert, but I helped to establish a national radio system in Canada several years ago called Aboriginal Voices Radio. And there were some established radio stations in northern Canada. It used to be called the Native American Communication Society. And all the northern communities north of the 60th parallel, for the most part, had, radio, FM, and right across the whole nation. So there was a number of communication societies like Wawate, for instance, which was always in Anishinaabe language right from the start. And, you know, we in the South, like where my community is in Ontario, we never had any of that, you know, ability to get on the air. So we had to do it on our own. And I used to pressure the North to come and help us because we were having trouble with our retaining our languages as well. Like we got six languages in our seven with Anishinaabe right next to us. But, you know, it was very challenging to get some broadcasting power in our day in Canada. But I did manage to get 70% of Canada, but radio, but I didn't have enough. It's an amazing story anyway, but I've been around public radio for many years and spent years developing this national radio system.
Well, we appreciate you talking about that, and I'll have to have you on the show again and talk specifically about that. But I really would love it if you could talk about the concert that you're coming up on and talk about how people can vote, too, for your song. Now it's in sixth place in the top 100 in Indigenous music, and talk about that a little bit, if you don't mind.
Yes, so they were one of the system right there in downtown Winnipeg, and they have this indigenousmusiccountdown.com. Now, I'm seeing a lot more American artists starting to, you know, involve themselves in this countdown because it's very viable. If you get to the top five, I believe, you get, as a musician, you get airplay on Sirius Radio. Then you start making a lot of money on your art, you know, because you're getting airplay and it does count on your, you know, you start to get some feedback in terms of dollars for your music. So it's really interesting over the years. And I don't think a lot of, you know, Minnesota artists know about it. They certainly can, Native American artists, the tribal artists can submit their music, you know, and then, you know, it's really fascinating. A lot of, there's a lot of great players on there. So it's really interesting to listen to the competition. It gives you a sense of, you know, what's going on in the Indigenous world as far as music goes. And it's, you know, very complimentary to taking those tracks and running with them. And especially for someone like yourself who do play tunes from time to time. I know it's primarily a spoken word program, right, Robert?
Yeah, definitely. But I want to say indigenousmusiccountdown.com. Vote for Gary and the Troublemakers there and take a listen to his song. We the first segment, we did play some of it, and your voice is sounding really good.
Yeah, thank you. It's maturing with my age.
Hey, Arvina, do you have a question for Gary?
Arvina, yes. I guess I am wondering about, I guess your thoughts about the developing talent in Indian country, especially about, you know, the wide variety of styles that especially young Native musicians are participating in, because it's, you know, it's not just kind of folk music or things that we might think of when we think of Indigenous popular music. You know, it's hip hop and it is soul, and I just would like to hear your thoughts on like how this is expanding and how we can keep expanding and get more Native youth interested in making music that is culturally relevant but also resonates with the population at large.
Well, this is exactly how. I mean, or this is exactly how to do it, is this Indigenous Top 40, right? Now, you guys as broadcasters, of course, can pick and choose and see, oh, look at that. That guy's number five. Let's pull that song in and then invite the artist to, you know, communicate with you guys. And that's what we need more and more of here in the States. I mean, I don't know how many, you know, low power FM stations we got, maybe it's around 40 now. And then of course there's a lot of, you know, broadcasting like Native Roots Radio, of course, along with commercial broadcasting. Right. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's the beauty of the Indigenous Music Countdown, because any artist that's aware of it, and, you know, we're all just working from our pocketbooks for the most part. None of us aren't backed by a record company. It's almost passé now because of all the streaming options for an artist. So it takes some time to finagle the process, but I'm impressed that, you know, a 70-year-old artist is being able to compete with the young ones, because every genre is on that top 40, you name it, it's there. And there's a special interest, especially in central Canada, with country music. So all of a sudden you come across a track that's this, you know, a track that's just straight up country, you know, and it's pretty fascinating to listen to the wide variety of the Indigenous Music Countdown that's actually competing.
Yeah. Wow, that's a great answer. You're going to be playing with Keith Sekola on March 15th at the Minneapolis Ice House at 3 p.m. at the in the door. Showtime's four, $20 in advance, $27 on the day of. I'm excited to see you both. Both are icons, but also, like you said, putting together relevant music to right now, 2026.
Yeah, I've been writing a lot of music because I'm trying to produce it, my eighth album, and I'm actually going to put it on vinyl this time, first time. And, you know, I collect vinyl for years. I especially chased down a lot of Native artists in the 70s and the 80s. I was chasing Native music back then, you know, and so that was fascinating. And then we, you know, Brian Wright McLeod did publish a book on all the artists that are Indigenous that we could research at the time. And I just see there's a new book coming out about Indigenous music and the artists that are participating. So, we're looking forward to the Ice House. Great venue in Minneapolis. I just love that place. It's and it's kind of a nonprofit hall, which is really interesting. So they made us a fair deal. They're very fair with the players, and that's not always the case in the big world. So we're really looking forward to that show. We have a wonderful band backing us up. A lot of players that usually play with David. David Huckfeld there in town. Yeah. He offered his rhythm section for us. And
nice.
Liz Draper's on bass. And I brought my guitar player from Albuquerque, New Mexico, Mr. Jamie Bird Yellowhorse, a Navajo Pueblo artist who's been with me for about 20 years. So we'll be in good shape by the time we get to y'all down there in Minneapolis.
Right on. March 15th, live at the Ice House. Gary, Arvina, Big Pina Gigi, thank you so much for being on Native Roots Radio, and we'll talk to you really, really soon.
Okay.
With wonders in our hearts, working through the troubles in our day. I'm so curious how daily life is going. Since I've been tied up in a knot, spin 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 a knot.
Programming on KFAI is supported by Quit Partner. Quitting smoking or vaping is easier said than done. Quit Partner offers Minnesotans no-cost resources to quit nicotine, including patches, gum and lozenges, coaching, and digital support. More at quitpartnermn.com.
Aneen, I'm Lieutenant Governor Peggy Flanagan, and you are listening to Native Roots Radio.
Hi, it's Dr. Evan Adams, and you're listening to Native Roots Radio. Hey, Victor, you better be listening.
In this portion of the show, we'd like to bring awareness to our wolf and bear populations throughout Turtle Island. Say no to the hunts.
Oh! Oh!
Hey, welcome back, everyone.
You always laugh at that part.
Welcome back.
Supposed to be the bear.
It was the bear. Yogi Bear. Hey, I want to introduce my awesome, beautiful wife, Wendy. She's been an animal advocate for many years, and she talks about our sacred animals and gives us sacred animal updates. How can you not give us sacred animal updates with this beautiful weather here in Minnesota?
I know. Hey, everybody. My name is Hanaji Hihani. That means cares to them. And I was given that name by my Dega Curtis. Curtis goes by Mashke Hanajinga, which means walks on white clouds. I'm a policy volunteer for Humane World for Animals, and I work on animal issues at the local and state level. It's always my pleasure to do that. And yes, it is beautiful. Excuse me. Got a little froggy in my throat. Yeah, so Wanda and I went for a walk. I was just and as I'm walking, there's a lot of people out right now because it's so beautiful out. It's almost 60 degrees and it's just really nice. It feels like, you know, we're coming alive again after this long winter.
Oh, I know it snowed in May before, so
I'm not going to get too excited about this, but as I'm walking, right, I'm walking Wanda, and there's people out walking their dogs. Half of the people have their heads down into their phones while they're walking their dogs.
Wow.
Yeah, and it's kind of like... I don't know. I think it's like a safety issue. Like Wanda and I were walking down the sidewalk and this guy has his head down in his phone and his big dog are walking towards us. And I can't cross the street because there's other dogs over there. And it's just like I'm walking towards this guy and I'm like, is he going to put his head up? Is he going to get his head out of his phone? Is he going to notice I'm here? Am I going to walk by and his dog's going to attack Wanda? Like all these things are running through my head. So finally I'm like, hello, excuse me, hello. And he finally like, oh, I'm like, can we pass? And then finally he like, you know, makes sure that is, you know, he's holding the leash a little bit, you know, tighter. He's pulling his dog over to the side a little bit so that Wanda and I can just like pass by.
Jeez.
Well, I'm just like, seriously, it's like, I really think it's like a safety issue. I mean, Robert, you remember that time you were walking Wanda down the alley and that dog came, you know, out of nowhere and ran after you guys. Like if you had your head down in your phone or, you know, you weren't going to see that.
That was a lickety split kind of thing, pulling her up by her harness and just protecting her because that dog wanted to bite her.
Yeah, I know. But I mean, if you had your, you know, you concentrating on your phone, you know, a split second, that could happen. That was dangerous. Didn't you tell me afterwards, like Wanda felt like Wanda was like,
she was looking up at me, like barking at me,
she was
thanking
appreciated you saving her from the other dog. I mean, that could happen anytime, you know, and then like people like hold their leash, you know, the leash at the end. I've talked about this before. They have a loop at the end of the leash and just hold it with your hand. You're supposed to put your hand through it.
Well, what about those people with the gun kind of thing that can go 50 feet?
The retractable
leashes,
save your
little dog's
drives me.
Guns?
Those are very, very dangerous.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, you're coming to an intersection, right? And you're walking your dog with one of those expandable, I don't even remember what they're called, expandable leashes. Yeah. You know, you hold them like you said. It's like a gun. And you press the button and you let the dog go. And
You think you're doing them a favor.
No, it's
but
dangerous.
Urban dogs.
Those are dangerous.
They're all over the place.
I know. And, you know, if you put your hand through the leash, through that hoop, and you have your arm around it, if the dog pulls, the leash has nowhere to go because it's, you know, pulling against your wrist. It's hard for me to explain it.
No,
but anyway, come on, people.
No more phones.
Let's pay attention while we're walking our dogs. Anyway.
Yeah.
I mean, there's lots of dogs. And every day, like on Facebook, you know, it's like people are bringing their dogs to the dog parks.
Yeah.
And there's always like, your dog bit mine. And this happened. I mean, first of all, Wanda is not a dog friendly dog, but I don't know if I would bring my dog to a dog park. Anyway, I found this little thing. It's really interesting. It's from Animal Matters Facebook page. And they are, they're from Best Friends. It's an animal sanctuary. It's in New York City. Remember we found Best Friends?
You and Joanne?
No, you and I. Remember when we were just walking that? Remember that?
That was just out of the nowhere.
Quite a few years ago. We were just like walking around Manhattan.
By Little Italy.
Yeah, and we just found this animal sanctuary in the middle of it's a shelter.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we like walked in to like check it out, and they're like a really good group. They called Best Friends. So anyway, I follow them, of course, on Facebook, but they posted this statistic, which I found really astonishing. If just 6% more people chose to adopt versus purchase their pets, we would end the killing of dogs and cats in the nation's shelters. So just 6% of the population.
We need to amplify that.
Yeah, only 6% more. But you know, as many, like I've had our neighbors, like, Wendy, what do you think about, you know, we want to get a dog and we want to get a breed, you know, this particular breed. What do you think we should do? And I give them this long, non-judgmental, serious, like, what's happening with the animal world today and how many dogs get euthanized and how many great dogs are in foster care right now or in shelters or whatever. And, you know, giving them this big explanation and why you should shop, you know, adopt, do not shop, and why it's important, blah, blah, blah. They turn around and they go to a breeder.
Yeah.
Like, why did you ask?
Hey, there's something I want to ask you too, because, yeah. You put this out there, and maybe we can run a spot on Native Roots Radio, but mm-hmm. talking about your art and how you're selling cards. Art. You're selling cards, and then the proceeds are going, because a lot of our relatives with issues with ice and all that have had to give up their dogs.
Yes, yes. So I have a Facebook page. It's called Pilots Palette. It's on Facebook. Or, you know, I don't know. Yeah. Pilot's Palette,
mm-hmm.
With an apostrophe, Pilot's with apostrophe, and Palette's P-A-L-E-T-T-E.
Ooh.
It's not the mouth palette, it's the painting palette. Yeah, so I know, it's confusing.
I know.
Anyway, I'm selling my art. It's right now I have just my greeting cards for sale. A lot of different stuff, a lot of animals. I paint a lot of animals, mm-hmm. but I've done some Native American art. Yeah. I've done just some scenery. I've done sunflowers, and all the proceeds are going towards animal shelters that have pets there because they were surrendered because their people have been deported, and or groceries for people, and or, you know, getting their laundry done, et cetera, et cetera. So yeah, check out Pilot's Palette. And I'll update my page later with some more stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. And just, you could just message me via Facebook, and I mail them out, and you'll get some greeting cards, and the proceeds 100%.
Yeah.
Keep any of the money will go to help people. And thank you for bringing that up, Robert.
And helping people and pets, which are relatives.
Yes,
and
absolutely.
I was just at a meeting today too, Wendy, and it always warms my heart. And I always think of you, but I also think of the Native way too. Is that we were talking about our relatives, mm-hmm. which are our ones with hooves, tails, mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. all those things.
Sins,
and they are our relatives in a Native way, and that's why it's so important that you've been talking about this over mm-hmm. the years.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, I've been, yeah. And you know, it's just like when I first started this, I was just like,
gave you 2 minutes.
You gave me 2 minutes. And I was just like, like in the beginning, I was like, this is too much time. Like how am I going to be talking about animals for all this time? It's been 10 years and I have not ran out of material. So
there's
always stuff to talk about. There's always stuff to talk about. And I really appreciate the opportunity. It's a privilege to be able to come on here and just, you know, just spread awareness and, you know,
and learn. And I know you learn and I learn and, you learn by, you know, looking up stuff here too. Mm-hmm, so it's mm-hmm. so important.
Absolutely. I appreciate it.
Hey, I want to give a shout out, Dr. Stately. We're still here. We are the seventh generation. Vote, vote, vote. We're still here. We'll see you tomorrow.
Pinigi again for listening to Native Roots Radio.
We are the Halusa Nation. We have been called the Indians. We have been called Native American. We have been called hostile. We have been called pagan. have been called militant. We have been called many names. We are the Halusa Nation. We are the human beings. The callers of names cannot see us, but we can see them.
Hello, children. Are you sitting comfortably? Then I'll begin. Once upon a time, there was a community radio station called KFAI. They played music from all around the world. That made people who listened very happy. So they went to KFAI.org and clicked donate to support it. And they all lived happily ever after.
Go to KFAI.org and click donate to support non-commercial, community-powered fairy tale radio.
You are listening to Fresh Air Community Radio, KFAI, 90.3 FM, Minneapolis, St. Paul, and around the world at kfai.org, non-commercial, community-powered radio.
Oh, it's bursting with ultrasonic.
Gin and tonic, please.